My name is Dan McNeil, and today I guess what I'll do is share a little bit what it was like growing up in a public housing projects. We used to call them projects in the late 60s and early 70s. Growing up as a black Catholic. And I wrote a little bit just trying to bring out some of the memories that the things we went through. So I'll do a little reading, then I'll share some particular incidences that happened that may be of some hilarity or insight or something to share. I grew up in a housing project on Chicago's far south side called Lote Homes. Lote Homes is bounded on the east by another project, which is a little more prestigious, which was called Princeton Park. Lote Homes occupies about a four-block radius east to west and about a block and a half radius north to south. It was a fairly small bungalow-style project as far as projects goes. It wasn't one of those incredibly high-rise projects, which I think because of the intensity of the of people in a close confined setting makes the whole living condition more intensified. But these were small bungalows, projects, and they had these nice white shutters on the outside of the windows, fake shutters, and there was a garden, and but there was a lot of concrete and asphalt and tar. You know, it was hard, and people used to ask, you know, what made them project or public housing kids so hard. Well, we literally grew up on hard. We grew up on, we played, we fell on, we lived, laughed, and loved on hard surfaces. And I tend to believe that, you know, the environment, and this is definitely a affirmation that to a large extent shapes the attitudes of people, you know. I even thought we might want to sometimes, if I got into the philanthropy mode, go back and just put fountains up around these projects, waters and gardens, because it was literally just hard surfaces. We used to jokingly call the projects, we used to call them brick tents, because they were just these units and cubicles that we lived in. There was like four bedrooms and a fair sized kitchen and a living room, and the inside of the house were made of these I don't see anything around here, these large cinder blocks, which tended to transmit the sounds. But I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. We had weekly and monthly cleaning chores so that the house, the walls, stove, the kitchen stayed remarkably clean. My father was a kind, literate man who was also a very strict disciplinarian around matters of cleaning chores. If he came in late and we were all asleep, and like what we did, I had six brothers and sisters. And so we would rotate the duties, like for 1 week I would have to do the dishes that whole week. And which was great, which means I only washed dishes once in 6 weeks. So the rest of the time you were free. But if he came home and the dishes weren't done, he would wake everybody up at like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And, but I'll get into that. I'll never forgive him for that. Yes, I'll forgive him. If he came in late and we were asleep and the dishes were not done, he'd turn on this bright 100-watt light bulbs, and then a bunch of grumbling, sleepy, thumb-sucking kids would get up to do dishes at 4:30 in the morning. This was cruel and unusual punishment, akin to Nazi torture sessions. But it was effective. It was effective, and whoever was on dish duty had the watchful eye and interest of five other people and whether or not they did their duty to family and to father. So if whoever went to bed at night, the rest of us were real intent to make sure that that was done, because we all have to get up, you know. The Catholic school bus, which would take us to school, we lived south and the school was north, was about an hour and a half drive or hour drive. So to get up at about 4 o'clock, we had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning so all the brothers and sisters could get in the one bathroom and feed and eat and get on the corner. So to come in at 4 o'clock and get up and clean some dishes and then get back up at was I really, he just had beat me then to do that. But he was effective. This type we're all responsible for each other kept us in a very tight military unit mentality. Like I said, the inside of our houses were made of large gray cinder blocks, which would carry the sounds and events from unit to unit remarkably well. So if you got a whooping, or if your parents had a fight, or there was a passion play of beyond a whisper, well, your neighbors might as well have a script in hand, because you could hear everything, you know. And what this did, this often produced, fights, because the next day you would get the interpretive report about what happened in your house. I heard your father, I heard you doing this or that. So, you know, it was kind of like living in a communal setting where everything was exposed, in a sense. As Catholics, we were initially under a lot of scrutiny. We were a minority within a minority. We were those Catholics who thought they were better than everybody else. Initially, we were the undercover Catholics. We would leave before the break of dawn, and the public school kids would go to school later. So we were up early and out, so no one really ever noticed it, that we were gone for our covert Catholic instructions. Under the cover of the dark morning, we were never seen. But after the second and third week, we were discovered coming home in the afternoon, discovered because of those damn uniforms, those damn blue pants, blue shirt, and a tie. It was like carrying a banner saying, "Hey, I'm a Catholic, kick my butt, please." I got my butt kicked so much, I used to give out numbers and have people stand in line waiting to take their time. The problem was not that I couldn't fight, but that the same folks who had me wearing those kick my butt banner uniforms were saying to me I was supposed to get my butt kicked lovingly. Well, I suffered under the philosophy of turn the cheek until my father got wind of the situation. And he gave me a perspective that stopped the fighting and did wonders for my status in the neighborhood and my self-esteem. He basically said, "Dan, if you let a bully beat on you, you encourage him by your acceptance to go beat on somebody else." Well, that wasn't a Christian thing to do. So for a while, I joyfully fought my fights, and after a while, I wasn't a Catholic kid, but I was Dan who went to a Catholic school. So it really helped, because a lot of what I was suffering under, I was told, "You don't fight, you turn the cheek." And the projects, well, you know, fighting was something that happened on a regular basis. And when it got out that I was the type of person who wouldn't fight back, it wasn't seen as a glorious religious stance. It was seen as, well, this guy's, he's an easy pickings. So when my father came and gave me a perspective and a philosophy where I could stand up, I learned that I could take care of myself pretty well. And that shifted the whole balance in terms of that. It was nip and tuck for a while. The thing to understand was that the label of public housing, a resident, being black and Catholic all carried a stigma. Public housing was considered and still is seen as a place where poor blacks and ignorant people reside. Actually, there were, when I was coming up, there were Polish, there was Irish, there was Italians or Hispanics, and we all kind of hung out together and had a good time. And although we were in no sense highbrow or snobbish, the Catholic position that it was inherently, the other religions were inherently evil, and that if at the very least wrong, so that if I went to any of the religious service, I was committing a grave mortal sin. Well, then I had friends, you know, in the projects and houses, who were Baptists and all different kind of religions, and they would invite me to come to their service, and I say, I can't go to your service because you're evil. I mean, your religion is the wrong religion. Well, that didn't sit well, you know. So I had to work that out with the people who I grew up with. So it caused a lot of problems in terms of being seen as highbrow and snotty. Let's see, where am I? My mother and father were well liked and respected in our neighborhood, and me and the kids, I guess we had a pretty stable or hospitable house. So a lot of the kids friends would come over late at night and watch the late night horror movies, and we'd eat popcorn, and a lot of them would stay over. So it was kind of a place for a lot of the people in the neighborhood, the kids who were having maybe a little more instability in their particular families, a place to come and just kind of chill out a little bit. So that helped a lot in terms of them seeing us not as highbrow, snotty, think we're better than Catholics, but as just the McNeils. We went to school, we were stigmatized as the blacks who lived in the public housing. So I got the stigmatization from in the neighborhood from being a Catholic, but I went to the school, I got it from being in the public housing. Oh, it was interesting times. We washed dishes in the school's cafeteria to help pay for tuition. When I walk through the dish team over here, I get memories of doing that for about 8 years in Catholic grammar school. Similar machine, just load them up and send them through. My father would deliver these traditional Thanksgiving baskets for the needy, and we load up the station wagon, and he would drive around. We'd drop them off, and we would receive one because we were one of the needy families. And this was very good for in relation to Thanksgiving. You had a nice meal, but you had to swallow your pride because everybody knew that you were the needy family, the public housing kids who had to get the basket and stuff. Haircuts were another bone of contention for us. Because if you got your hair cut, and my father liked to cut my hair real close, but to get your hair cut close, when you went to school, everybody would go upside your head because the sound of hitting the bald head. So every time the haircut in time would come, it would be like, you know, a point of tension, because you knew that for the week that your hair grew back, that you was going to get slapped and you had to fight. And my parents never understood what they were doing in terms of getting. I said, don't cut it so close. Don't cut it. And they look up in the mirror and you said, oh, here we go for one whole week. You had this another battle, you know. I have an incident it's interesting because, you know, we're talking about comparisons and how you don't really realize a lot of times your situation until you look around and see what the Joneses are doing and what's happening. Well, once we in the housing projects, everything was economically about the same level. You know, you didn't really realize that you were poor until you would turn TV on and see this, because everybody was in the same boat. So it wasn't a heavy thing. I remember having holes in my shoes, and my mother would put fresh cardboard in the inside of the shoe so that I would have a little, you know, a little padding on the bottom of my sole. And I come home in the evening, she'd be standing in the doorway with a fresh thing of cardboard to replace that worn out one. But it was interesting because it you know, looking back, we're talking about having fun, looking back on it, my feeling about the time in that time was basically we had a lot of fun. We used to get together, we were, all the kids were poor, but we were real creative, so we would get together and somebody would get an idea about making some stilts. And one guy would get his hammer out, he'd make some stilts, and then the next thing you know, it's like the whole neighborhood would come alive with these sounds of nails and hammers, and everybody was making stilts. And then you would be, some guy had stilts would be like 4 feet, then it'd be 5 feet, and it would be, and next thing you see a guy, he'd be getting on his stilts from the top of his window, you know, and everybody's walking around with stilts. And so it was a great thing. Everybody, you look around the neighborhood, and all these kids would be walking around on these stilts they had made. And then that would wear out, and then the next thing that would happen would be somebody would get some old skates and a board and a pop. Pop used to come in these boxes, and you put that on top of the box and put a board across it, and it'd be skateboards. And the next thing you know, for the next week or so, you hear a bunch of hammers from morning to night, and everybody had these skateboards, and we were all running around with these skateboards, and people would get very fancy with the feathers, and they would decorate them. So it was a lot of fun, you know. It was the poverty wasn't a stigma until it came in from the outside, you know. And the projects was bounded on the west side by a train that used to come by, and we would jump the freights, slow moving trains. We would ride them, and there was a lot of undeveloped areas, so we'd hike out and we would take some potatoes and bacon and stuff. So you know, it's interesting how you know it's perceived in terms of what fun really is about in terms of monetary and materialistically. So we had a bunch of fun a lot of ways. There's a story that happened which wasn't fun at all. I'll get to that later because it's kind of a sad story. Another thing that we did, once we got past the thing of being Catholic, we'd have sessions. We'd sit on the in the playgrounds, and we'd tell stories, and we used to have what's called playing the dozens. I don't know if you ever heard of playing the dozens. It's a particularly, probably, African-American cultural thing. It's we call it signifying or playing the dozens. And it was good in the sense that it would sharpen your wits. And basically, you would either brag on yourself or you would talk about somebody, you know. There was lines like, we would laugh about being poor. We would say something like, Dan, you're so poor that, you know, how's it go? You got so many roaches and rats in your house that they have to pay rent, you know. And somebody would say that, and someone would respond, well, you eat ghost toasties and evaporated milk, you know. And so it would be this play of wits, of interesting wits that we would play back and forth and to see who could be the most witty and whatnot. So it was fun, and it was taken in a fun way. We just end up laughing a lot. Every now and then it would get too serious, and someone would say something about somebody's mother, and then it would take off in a different vein. But mostly it was just a way of getting together and hanging out and having a kind of a communal sense of fun. One of the things that happened, what do I have there? One of the things that, as I got older, because I'd have to establish reputation that I would fight, and then because I was the kind of person who wouldn't fight, I would not get into fights a long time, and people say, well, you won't fight, then I have to fight. So I had to kind of renew my reputation every 6 months to kind of have a peace there, you know. But there was a guy, a little kid named Georgie Rowe. I'll never forget Georgie Rowe. There's always a little guy who wants to hang with the bigger guys. You know, that's his thing. He wants to hang with the bigger guys. So he was always trying to do things to endear himself to the older guys. And, you know, the older guys kind of put up with him, so he was always kind of stretching out a little bit more and doing this. And during the riots, the late 60s with the riots and Martin Luther King, there was the projects were here, then there was the tracks, and then there was like this shopping center. And people were running over the have-nots saw their moments to get something. So they were running over and they were taking things out of the store. Georgie was such a young kid. I don't think he ever got the gravity of what was really happening. He just saw that everything was up for grabs and he could get some free stuff. And so he ran across and he came back and with some things he had gotten, a watch and something else. And some of the he was giving them out because he was trying to, you know, be with the big guys. And some of the guys didn't get anything, and they were saying, "Hey, you didn't give me anything." So he ran back across the tracks and was going to get some more stuff so the guys who didn't get anything could have something. By this time, the police had come in, and they were Daley had the shoot to kill order out. And as he was coming back across the tracks, he was, you know, like, "Hey, I got this, I got this." And he was all exuberant about what he had got. And a shot rang out, and it the force of it just kind of knocked him over this away, you know. And he was killed, a little guy. And it just struck me that it was such a, he just never realized the severity of the situation and stuff. So that was one of the stories that just sticks out in my head about that. But most of the time, you know, things were okay. As I got older, things started to get a little more serious. The influx of drugs started to come in. And before, you know, it was a situation, well, you got in fights, but after a while, if you stood up for yourself, it was no problems. When the drugs came in, the street ethic, the guidelines, they all changed, you know, and it got real crazy. And I started to move out prior to that, but it got real crazy. And we used to, I remember sitting in the car, and this is before the drugs came, we were sitting in the car and we would talk, and a lot of camaraderie would come up from just us sitting together and talking about things that we hoped to do when we got bigger, and possibilities and the concerns. And I remember this one time we were just all sitting in the car and we were getting high, smoking some grass. Yes, I smoked grass when I was younger. Yes, yes. I inhaled and I let it out too. but I can remember this scene of it. We didn't have a lot. One guy had a car, and so we were sitting in this, it was raining, and it was like we were sitting in this car and we were high and we were talking about all these things that we were going to do and things we couldn't do. And this, the sound of the rain beating on the top of the car was like sitting inside of a drum. And it just had a great little memory, you know, sitting in there and talking and going on about things. Many of my friends from that time, it's interesting, like many of my Catholic friends had a very, are doing very well now. Most of my friends from the public housing are either dead, in jail, on drugs, or crazy. You know, not all of them, but most of them. And I don't know what inferences can be drawn from what that's about, but I do know that the stability of the Catholicism in the school did bring in some sense of structure to the lives. So I used to play a game when I would come home from the bus when I started running. I started running very early in my life, before running got popular. I've always enjoyed it. It kept me out of a lot of problems. I got involved in physical things. And I would get off the bus, and the bus would only go four blocks to my house, but it was a slow four blocks, so I started to run. So I would, in my Catholic uniform, I would race home. My brother was still on the bus, but I would get off the bus at the transport, and I'd race home. I'd change clothes, and I'd be back on the corner. So when he got off the bus, I'd be standing there like Superman, you know, had done this whole thing. And he was always amazed at that, you know. But, you know, a lot of the problems that happened with the Catholic, being a Catholic school kid and projects, happened basically in the initial part of the thing. The acceptance, I guess at the bottom of the barrel, acceptance was pretty easily forthcoming among the kids. Like I said, we had Italians, and we had Greeks, and we had Polish, and a lot of kids of a lot of different nationalities. And we were all poor, and we were all just, not poor in terms of being aware we were poor, we were just kids having a lot of fun. And so it was actually, you know, it was a very good experience. People, when they hear about you grew up on the South Side and projects, they kind of sometimes go, oh. But I had a great time as a kid, you know. My mother would plant flowers outside of the house. It was always kind of a nice setting. We did a lot of hikes. The situation, which is now is in reverse from what's happening, there was always a communal concern about the kids in the neighborhood. So if you did something wrong, any of the adults would take you to task for it, and would bring you to their parents, your parents, and your parents would get on you. Now what's happening is that it's so crazy that people are afraid to chastise kids if they're wrong. The kids may go, you don't know what the kids got or whatever, or the parents may go crazy. But in that time, you know, there was a lot, there was really a strong communal structure and looking out for everybody, you know. We would go out, and we used to, for revenue, we'd go and we would deliver groceries in the little wagon. Or we would go out and it used to be the turn of the pop bottles. You get pop bottles for 2 cents, a nickel or whatever. And so we would go out and we would, for hours, we would get so many pop bottles. When we would come into the store, the manager's eyes would bug out because we would have crates of pop bottles. And then we would get together as a group, and we'd all go out collectively, and we'd bring in these pop bottles from all over the place because you got 2 cents a bottle. And then we would get all the little money, and we'd go buy our little candy. And we'd go, you know, over into the undeveloped area and sit somewhere out in a little bit of the woods or whatever and sit down. And we'd have these, all this candy and all this stuff that we had worked for collectively and we hadn't gotten. And so it was a nice feeling, all in all. The nuns who I went to school with were very, very, very strict in terms of situations. And I think coming from a public housing project, and this is an assumption, I don't know if this is correct, this is looking back over years, but I think that slanted them somewhat towards how we were treated. I used to get, seemed like special treatment in a negative sense or whatever. Many of the nuns would pull your ears, you know, and to the point sometimes it would create problems with your ears and things. But when it came time to do the work or whatever, a lot of times we end up having to do a lot of different work because we're working through for our tuition and things. So, you know, it was just a thing I guess I really want to share is that there were some hard times, but all in all, it was a fun time, and that a lot of people think that growing up in the projects is a real hard way, and the projects today as opposed to then is quite a different situation. But there were a lot of real good times. There was a lot of the parents would get involved with the kids' interactions and things. The kids had a kind of a commonality with each other. So it was only during the first part of when I first was a Catholic that I had a lot of problems. And then it was just the problem was just growing up in the public housing, which was the biggest concern.
That took place between your community and outlying communities that would permit you to relate to a people outside of the project. Were there significant opportunities? Now, you speak of your bus ride to school, and that certainly was one.
Mm-hmm.
But as you look back at that time, were there times when that someone or that group of people and you connected that gave you a perspective what life is like in other places too? And so I've already heard you say that sometimes that comparison can really shoot you down, like the mm-hmm, business mm-hmm. with the pistols, but
mm-hmm.
but on the other hand, it could also have been some very helpful times for both parties involved.
Well, there's a couple of things. I guess some of them are just traditional. As a kid, the Catholic schools, they offered the Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling somebody I hadn't really been hiking since I've been in the Boy Scouts. But it was an opportunity to get out into other areas, get out into nature, to see something beyond the environment, the projects, and to explore some things. And then as I got older, I went to schools that had, schools have different diversity of peoples, and that helped me to expand beyond the understanding or the limitations of living within the projects. I think what happened to a lot of the people who didn't make it or whatever, quote unquote, was that they never really got glimpses of other situations, of other possibilities, of other settings. I was talking, I think it was Dan, was about bringing kids out and going to the farms and things. It is, looking back on it, that's a very, very powerful impact, because what happens, a lot of the kids just get a sense that there's no way to go. There's only the projects, there's only drugs, there's only hustling, there's only this, and they don't see anything else. And they see education or other things outside of their possibilities. So they anchor down into what they can do, and so they end up. And a lot of these my friends were just real sharp. I mean, just really perceptive, intelligent. Deep thinking, but that ended up being used in negative ways, because I think a lot of times they weren't exposed, and they were exposed in terms of TV, but what they were exposed to in the TV were things that they didn't. TV was a fantasy land. That was almost seemed like, well, the reason the TV didn't really negatively wear us down was because we thought that's something that white folks had and did, but no black folks that we saw were partaking of those. So it was good that it didn't wear us down, because we figured that wasn't our due anyway. But it was what was bad about it. It didn't really give them the opportunity to say, this is for you too. But it was when people, like Dan was saying, was bringing people out to the farms or taking them on trips or just traveling, that they were able to realized that there were some other options, and that broke the chain of living and dying and raising families and kids having kids type of mentality. It was seen and been exposed to it. It's a lot to do with it. To a certain extent, you know, the books and libraries did that, but that was, a lot of the people didn't partake of that for various reasons. Yeah, does that answer your question? Yeah, and for me, it was just being exposed. And then my parents were people who were never project or public housing mentally bound. I never felt like I was a product of the projects. We just happened to live there. My mother and my father both just never, it never saturated their being, so they didn't partake of this mentality, you know, just things that they would say and would do and things. So I think that provided my escape from the situation. Yes?
Probably a couple comments was that listening to the, or watching the movie Where the Spirit Lives, a movie with that depicted the Catholic boarding schools in Canada, and how basically here as Native American people had to deal with a similar situation, and you sort of ran across, gave a good portrayal. But also another point I was seeing when listening to you was that when I go back to my reservation and be amongst my own people and with my family, and even though as bad as reservations are portrayed, it ends up I find that family community and that family fun and that total relationship that I always once had.
Mm-hmm.
Glad mm-hmm. hear the way you presented it too.
Yeah, there was a period, you know, when I signed for religious affiliation, I put down lapsed Catholic, and there was a period where, you know, I had a certain amount of animosity towards the Catholic Church for various reasons, for some of the ideologies that they profess, for some of the historic things that I saw that had happened with them. But taken in a holistic context, there was a lot of good, you know. There was structure, there was discipline, there was a telling or relating of a higher intelligence or a God or a supreme being, that there was a greater order in the universe to partake of. And I think a lot of the kids in the public housing, there were some who were religious, but a lot of them were non-religious, and so there was no sense of a greater order or a higher overseer of things. It was here and now, and I better do what I got to do to make it, and what I have to do is I don't have many options. So it kind of motivated the actions. But having gone to Catholic school at an early age and having some sense of a greater being and having some sense of right and wrong and structure and discipline, it did a lot to at least spiritually or inside of my head also to think that there's something more than this. You know, a lot of the kids didn't really know right from wrong. They just knew strong from weak. They knew that you were either the predator or you were the prey. And so, in a sense, it was hard for me because I had a moral constitution to the point where the certain things that I knew were wrong and couldn't do. And it was an encumbrance in terms of sometimes just negotiating my life through the projects. Because these other people, they weren't bothered by that. There was no consciousness. You know, if they had to do something to somebody or steal something, whatever, there was no moral struggle. Or religious or philosophy to struggle with, and in terms of that that section of the hierarchy, those are the people who raised up quick. It was just, they're very strong, they're very conscienceless people who were able to go out and do things, whatever. We used to do, you know, we would do, you know, kids do daredevil things, but we would do some pretty chancy things, and I got into some of that because I was, you know, I was with my peer group, you know. One of the fun things we used to do, we used to stand in the tracks which ran right, the tracks kind of divided the public housings from those who had houses. So it was the have-nots and the haves, and there was a track. So we would fill up these, I'm not proud about this, but it was fun. we would fill up these balloons, and then when the guys would come by in their convertibles going to the whatever, we'd have, on hot days, we'd have these balloons, and we would have behind the bush, and we just bombarded with all these balloons to splatter and stuff in their cars and stuff, and do those kind of things. And we did that. I guess jumping the freight trains was kind of dangerous, but we had a lot of fun with that and a lot of things. But you know, on the good side of it, there was, and I give thanks in remembering a lot of what I got from the Catholic schools system and the Catholic religion, you know. Thoughts, ideas, input, questions. You know, the battle that I had with the Catholic schools, which manifested in the particular in terms of my friends asking me to come to their services, really created a lot of problems. You know, not being able to go to their services, and being told that we should almost definitely, you know, always try to bring people into our church and stuff. That created a lot of problems with my friends in the neighborhood stuff for a while, you know. So those were some of the things. Let's see. There's another little point here I wanted to bring out. Oh, one of the things we used to do with, they don't have it anymore, but they used to be, if you were Catholics, you know, you didn't eat meat on Friday, and you only ate fish and stuff. So, you know, we'd have people over for dinner and stuff, and that was always a strange thing. Well, you know, where's the meat, or how come fish, you know? But, I think a lot of it also is being Catholic. And I think we were the only Catholics, as I remember, in this particular project. And that created a little bit of exposure by way of residual or secondary effect, because a lot of the people who came in to see how we were living and how the Catholic religion, and I say Catholic, but I guess I should say how religion was affecting the workings of our family, and I think a few people, you know, may have been benefited from it. You know, there was a lot of in the projects. There was a lot of drinking would happen a lot, mostly on the weekends. It's always been interesting how people would work Monday through Friday. And a lot of the work was hard, and the options were limited. So they'd get the check, and there would be a fair amount of partying Saturday. And then for the black population, particularly the ones who were into the Baptists and the different churches, everybody got up, no matter how late you were out partying Saturday, everybody would get up, and no matter how much sinning you did, they would be in church Sunday. You know, there was always, you could count on that. You know, and when I went to my first Baptist ceremony, I really enjoyed the energy, because in Catholicism, it was a very pious thing. You know, we used to kneel all the time.
Yeah.
Kneel. You know, and but when I went to the church, there was singing. There was these energetic expressions of joy and things like that, you know. And that was one of the major differences that I saw that I appreciated in those churches, you know. But by that time, I had pretty much made a choice that this wasn't going to be my religion for life, that there were other things I wanted to include, you know. So I don't know. Well, any questions? That's the nip and the tuck of it, basically. We got a lot more time. Things to say here.
Did you go on to public high school?
I was supposed to go to public high school. In fact, I was going to go into, believe it or not, the priesthood at one point. I think most Catholic boys at some point considered going into the priesthood. It was just part of the thing. And so I thought about going into the priesthood, but we didn't have enough money to send me to the Catholic grammar school, and I ended up going into a public high school, which I think was a good balance. I think from the formative years and the 8 years in the Catholic grammar school, going to public high school, there was a shift that kind of rounded it out. You know, I think I got what I needed in those 8 years, and if I had went further, it's all subjective, I don't know, but I think I might have gotten a little maybe oversteeped in it. So I didn't go to public high school at all. I mean, Catholic high school at all. Many of the people who I went to Catholic grammar school with did go to Catholic high schools, and most of them now, I don't think there's any priests, but most of them now are professionals and doing pretty good, you know. The situation with the difference between the men, my sisters had a little different experience in terms of being Catholic high school, Catholic grammar school girls as opposed to boys. They seemed to be able to mix a little bit easier, and it wasn't so hard on them in terms of getting along within the things. I guess the girls didn't take it. But even they got a little bit of stigma initially about those Catholics. The situation now with one of the things about the public housing projects now is that there's such a intensity of congestion. I mean, the housing projects that I lived in, there was a little elbow room, but these tall projects that are stacked up on each other create a lot more intensity. So I'm speaking from a low intensity experience of projects as opposed to public housing, as opposed to some of the ones that are out here now, which are high intensity. There's a lot of information, a lot of concentration of energy. It was told to me, and I don't know if this is true, but that there was a study done in terms of they tried with rats what the condition would be, the results would be if they packed rats on top of each other in small concentrated areas. And what they found was, and I think it's done at one of the think tanks around the country, I don't know, it was IIT, one of them, that when they stacked the rats up in these concentrated, dense areas, that they started to show abnormal behavior. They started to be more violent, more aggressive, fighting, some places even cannibalizing each other. And that study was part of the, and this could get into black paranoia, but I heard this, and I don't know the validity, but I heard this. But that study was part of what the impetus was for building the projects, you know, and that's what's happening. You see a lot of imploding, or a lot of eating and fighting and infighting each other, and a lot of it is not the people. A lot of it is the environment, the conditions, the structure of the environment, coupled with the drugs. You know, and not to digress with that, but the drugs also are coming from another source. And when you put those two elements together, you will probably see a lot of people. There's a saying, if you know, if you live in a jungle, you know, you grow claws, you know, fangs, and a lot of these people are working with that. Yeah. So I hope that's not true, but I heard that one of the things that happens in the projects a lot is that the kids end up having it's a lower income, but the kids end up having kids at a very early age, and that traps them in a sense. They don't have the you have babies having babies. It produces it reduces the chances of getting out of the projects. So you'll look in the projects and you'll see generations of people who've been there. Their great grandfathers and mothers were in there, and they haven't found a way out, you know. Which is why I say again, it's such a positive thing to bring kids out of that, just even one or two summers, see other things, because then they go back to school, they go back whatever, and they know that there's other realities out here to partake of. And so it makes quite a difference.
I didn't hear your whole conversation, but I grew up in the project in the inner city of Minneapolis, and some of my experience until I was in sixth grade was I went to the public school, and it was sort of segregated. My father was in the service, and when he went away, and this is during the Second World War, and then my parents were married at 18 and 19, so they, you know, I don't really recall, I mean, just some of the stories that my mother's told me until, you know, I was probably about six or seven. So those formative years.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if it was my mother particularly, but it was like real fearful. There's like, you can't go out after dark. People are looking in the windows, and so there was a lot of, I always sort of felt a little bit fearful and always sort of on my guard. Also, it was segregated. I mean, there was, it was low-income housing, but the white community lived here, mm-hmm. even though we went to school and we got along, but we were sort of more segregated.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was in sixth grade, we moved, and I was way behind. We moved out into the suburbs, and I had a real difficult time. I was like probably in some of my classes, the education, they were much more advanced, and I, you know, had to do a lot of extra studying to kind of catch up.
Yeah.
But I have to say it was really positive. There were a lot of kids to play with, and you kind of learn how to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like people say about living out on a farm, and it was so wonderful, and it was so free, I sort of think, gee, that might be nice, because it was sort of like you were always sort of fighting for your.
Mm-hmm.
Your space, and you had to kind of learn how to take care of yourself, and
exactly.
So.
Exactly. I mean, my experience is the projects really feeling about it. It was overall was fun, and that it strengthened me. You know, it had a strengthening effect, and it's not the same conditions now in terms of some of these high rise projects, but I felt that. When I go places and do things, I have a sense of I'm comfortable in the streets. I can go places and I kind of can read nuances, and I know certain. I can pick up on certain things. Black males have the one of the highest mortality rates, you know. But I do believe by growing up in the projects. It gave me a sense of a certain kind of life and street awareness, and at the same time, having the Catholic formative years helped me to have a certain spiritual or religious awareness, so that together, I felt like it was a good combination for me. You know, I mean, I had to work things out, but as I look at it now, I actually am glad that I had that experience of situations, particularly now that I'm still living in an urban setting, because I can pick up certain things. I know when I'm kind of being hustled, and I can read body language, and someone's coming up on me, and by virtue I'm comfortable, a lot of times stuff doesn't come at me in certain ways. And having that in one hand, and the experience of that in one hand, and then having I give first credence to my parents, because that's what was really the foundation, but the support of growing up in a religious school, and I should stop saying Catholic, I think it's just a religious school, together, even though it was kind of hard at the time, together has given me a kind of a rounding out that I feel pretty good with, you know. And all in all, like I said, I think about the projects, and it was like a lot of times we were hanging out, we were laughing, did a lot of laughing, made a lot of different things with our hands. We really had to draw on our creativity and our camaraderie, because we didn't have a lot of material things. And so it was a lot of, we just did a lot of things, played a lot of counting games, and had a lot of fun, actually. It was only when the drugs started coming in that it really got crazy.
My friends who went to the Catholic school, I think they learned more than I did. I think the nuns, and particularly the nuns, really were, and even some of my friends who are like my age who have went to parochial school, and basically I'm speaking of the Catholic school, really were very disciplined, and they learned how to read and write and how to kind of think and so forth, that I think that was a real positive.
Mm-hmm.
And then as an adult, I went to a Catholic women's college, and I really found that to be a really positive, particularly the nuns.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say, you know, that just my observation that that the Catholic schools have done a good job in education.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know how it is in today, but at that point in time, it was real good. I mean, it was unheard of to not do your homework. I mean, if I didn't do my homework, I couldn't sleep at night, because I knew when I got to the school, there was going to be some retribution. You know, we had one sister, Sister Incanada. You know, you never forget these people's names, Sister Incanada, and she was like, I mean, she could just appear, and all the, you know, kids have energy, all the energy would just. To stop, you know, because you knew you did not mess with Sister Incanada, you know. And they used to have, she used to have you, if you were acted out, and if you were really bad, they sent you to her. And they'd have you stand, she's, I don't know where she got this from, maybe some Zen Buddhist, but she had you stand like this for like a half an hour or whatever. And you didn't think about putting your leg down or whatever. And, I mean, it was remarkable how much control they had, you know. And we had one sister, Sister Lucy, who was a judo expert. And after certain, there was the, from 1 to 4, you were in 1 yard where you played. And then after the 5th grade, you would go to across the street for the bigger kids' yards. And these were all guys over here in this yard. And we were, you know, the guys I grew up with, looking back, they were just, these guys were grown by the time they got to the 7th grade. I mean, they had beard, I mean, mustaches. I mean, they just grew early, and they were just real rowdy kind of individuals, real. But she would walk through that yard, you know, the nuns with the habit and their hands in here, and she got her respect. And every now and then you see something happen to someone, and she took this one guy, and that's the first time I saw a judo demonstration. And she flipped this guy and just threw him on the ground with such grace and power that for the rest of the year she just had to walk through the yard. And didn't nobody have anything to say about it, you know. And it was that kind of discipline and structure that went on. You know, we did a lot of roller skating and stuff, and
was that something?
The roller skate, yeah.
Yeah, we used to roller skate.
A lot of roller skating.
I think that was the only thing we could ever afford.
Yeah.
roller skating.
What, Daniel?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see, I don't know how to ask the question, but the way the situation now and projects and everything with drugs and everything, is there any hope or is it just going to keep deteriorating? And it's really a pain. It's painful.
Yeah. I think that I see it, I personally see it has to be addressed at two levels. I see it has to first, you have to deal with it from the source of how it's coming in the country, and then you're going to also have to deal with it in terms of the demand. I think as long as there's a demand, there's so much money in these drugs. And see, and for the people in the projects and in those situations who don't either believe or see options, that is such a lucrative